on It's Supernatural. Aliens, UFOs, are they real? A former branch chief of the Department of Guided Missiles says yes. Discover the shocking truth behind UFOs, where they come from, and what their end time plan is.
Can ancient secrets of the supernatural be rediscovered? Do angels exist? Is there life after death? Are healing miracles real? Can you get supernatural help from another dimension? Has the future been written in advance? Sid Roth has spent 30 years researching the strange world of the supernatural. Join Sid on this edition of It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here. Welcome to my world where it's naturally supernatural. Are UFOs real? I mean, for sure. Does the Bible talk about them? Are UFOs involved in end time Bible prophecy, end time events? Could they be a little piece of a puzzle that we have missed? My guest, Chuck Missler, says yes. He's a Naval Academy graduate and former branch chief of the Department of Guided Missiles, CEO of six public companies. Four of the six were highly classified in the Department of Defense. Chuck Missler, you are such, in my opinion, and I'm entitled to say this, you are such a renowned, wonderful Bible teacher. Are you a little Miss Sugar? What are you talking about? UFOs, flying saucers? I don't get it.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the intended encouragement, but I really came at this whole subject because of my love for the Bible. It happens that I come out of an information science background. My whole career, 30 years in the strategic community, gives me perhaps a little different perspective than most people would have going at this topic. But I want to right up front indicate it was my biblical interest that brought me into this rather than my high-tech background, although that's proven to be that and my Department of Defense connections have been very valuable to me. So that's one of the reasons I find myself in this peculiar posture.
But it's not, in other words, he has a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge from the intelligence community, which helps him put a lot together of what we'll be talking about. But he's saying it's his love for the Bible that is really motivating him right now. So you found a controversial verse in Genesis 6, which has to do with a prophecy that Jesus said.
I start with Jesus, and in Matthew 24, He gives four disciples an inside briefing on a second coming. And in that briefing, he makes a very strange remark. He says, as the days of Noah were, so shall the days of the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, many people presume he just meant that it was because of the business as usual. So anyway, the point is, right, we need to understand what the days of Noah were like in order to understand what he was saying. So that takes us to Genesis 6, and when you jump into Genesis 6, you quickly discover that very few seminaries teach what that passage really says. And so the first, as you get into that Genesis 6, you have to understand the first two verses are one sentence, and it deals with this strange goings-on between the fallen angels producing hybrids with humans. And that was so uncomfortable in the early years of the church that it was the understanding of the early rabbis. It was also the understanding of the early church that what it was dealing with was fallen angels cohabiting with human women, producing a strange hybrid offspring. But when you get to about the 5th century, that was a very uncomfortable posture. So they cooked up this, what they call the lines of Seth argument, and that's what's taught in most seminaries. One of the things I discover is that many people who are seminary products of most seminaries haven't been taught that there are different perspectives of Genesis 6, and it's the literal, careful study version of Genesis 6 that starts to raise the fog on this whole issue.
Now, tell me about the word Nephilim. What does that mean?
In the Hebrew, it comes from the verb nephal. It means the fallen ones, and that's the term used. Don't confuse that with the fallen angels. The fallen angels, according to Genesis 6, cohabited with human women to produce a hybrid offspring that are called in the Hebrew the Nephilim. In the Septuagint version of the Old Testament, the translation of the Old Testament into Greek, they use the word gigantes, which is transliterated giants, right. And they did happen to be giants, but that's not what the word means. The word actually means, in the Greek, the earthborn. And so, from the Greek point of view, they're earthborn. From the Hebrew point of view, they're the fallen ones. But either way, they're pointing to a hybrid, and it apparently was part of Satan's plan to contaminate the Messianic line.
But so the purpose of the flood was to get rid of these.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. You study verse 9 of Genesis 6, it speaks of Noah that his genealogy was untainted, unblemished. And apparently it was a distinctive in that sense. He may not have been the only one unblemished, but the fact that he was unblemished qualified him for what God was going to do, among other things. But the point is, the whole issue that God chose to do was to save 8 people in the ark and erase the blackboard, so to speak.
Okay, but if the blackboard was erased, then we don't have to fool with them today, if they were all destroyed.
Except Genesis 6 verse 4 says there were Nephilim in the land in those days, comma, and also after that. And we discover, many good Bible scholars miss this, that you really won't understand subsequent events in the Old Testament by not realizing it happened again. When God in Genesis 15 and Genesis 17 confirms the land covenant to Abraham, he tells Abraham that he and his descendants are going to be away for 400 years, but after 400 years, they're going to return. That gave Satan, who's obviously listening, the realization that he had 4 centuries to lay down a minefield. And that's why when Moses enters the land and he sends his at Kadesh Barnea, he sends in the 12 reconnoiters, if I can call them that. They come back and say, in Numbers 13, verse 33, says there were Nephilim in the land. So it happened again.
I'll tell you what, hold that thought. Did you know that a dozen astronauts have reported UFOs? Don't go away, we'll be right back.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here with Chuck Missler. And Chuck, so many astronauts are reporting UFOs, but one was amazing. This one astronaut, John Blaha, a ham radio operator, actually picked up what he was saying. As a matter of fact, a picture's worth 1,000 words. Let's take a look at that now.
The wording is as follows. Houston, this is Discovery. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance.
Houston, this is Discovery.
I have a question for you. Why is there so much misinformation? Why are there so many cover-ups? I mean, when astronauts are reporting UFOs, what is the reason, in your opinion, for the misinformation, the cover-up?
I would be conjecturing, like most people, one of the great mysteries in this whole area is why the cover-ups by all the governments, but the most by the United States. Other countries are starting to release those information, but in the United States, there is a deliberate attempt to hide this area. And that's probably the biggest mystery isn't this one. The biggest one is Roswell. Why is the Roswell incident back in 1947 enjoy a higher level of classification than our most sensitive warheads?
You're from the intelligence community. You should tell me. Well, it makes no sense. I agree.
And it's a mystery. I don't have a conjecture as to why they're doing it, but it's clear 2 presidents and 4 congressmen have been unable to crack the security that surrounds the Roswell incident. Why? That was 60 years ago. And that's the mystery. Obviously, there's all kinds of bizarre stories that have come out of that experience. But the real mystery to me isn't that. The real mystery is, why is it classified? Why does the government hide it? And I don't have any conjectures. I think those conjectures are just as wild as the other conjectures about the UFOs.
According to your tapes, this cover-up is very unusual because some 30 newspapers reported it in 47, and then just immediately after, what happened?
Yeah, Blanchard, the colonel of the base, when the Roswell thing first happened, issued a press release that a saucer had landed and so forth. Within a few hours, 400 miles away, the Brigadier General in charge of the 8th Air Force countermanded that press release and hatched this story about it was a weather balloon and so forth. That starts a whole series of the silliest, most inane cover-up stories. There's been a sequence of them. First, it was a weather balloon. Well, that didn't fly. They went at one after the other. And to the community, it's almost insulting because the cover-up stories are so empty, so foolish, so ridiculous.
But what about that new technique, digital imaging?
It's interesting that when Brigadier General Ramey made his press release countermanding Blanchard's, the press took pictures. Many years later, just a few years ago, a guy by the name of Johnson, who took the picture, we were able to get the negatives, and by using advanced digital analysis of the negatives, they were able, an analyst by the name of Rudiak, was able to use advanced information techniques to unravel some words that were on the memo that was in Ramey's hand. And it speaks of the victims and the disc that crashed. In other words, this
actually calls it not a plane, a disc.
A disc that crashed, and there are victims implying. See, the stories have always said there were four bodies, three were dead, one was still alive. That was the unconfirmed rumors that we heard. Well, it turns out that memo, that unraveling, is regarded as the smoking gun because it demonstrates that the Air Force has been lying all along.
Well, these UFOs, they defy laws of physics. Your degree is in physics,
yes,
I believe.
The fundamentals, we want to get right at that. I'm sorry, presuming a lot here on your audience. The UFOs have two problems. The one problem is they are tangible. They show up on multiple radars. They leave physical evidence, burnt ground and radioactivity and so forth. So they're tangible. They're not hallucinating. Radar sets don't have hallucinations, okay?
Right.
On the other hand, they make right-angle turns at exotic speeds. They go faster than the speed of sound without sonic booms. They do things that seem to violate physical laws, and yet they are physical in one sense, and yet they're not physical in another. Now, the other area we need to just acknowledge is this is the toughest area to research because not only because of all the hoaxes and all the crackpots that are in this area, is because of the deliberate disinformation by the government trying to hide these areas. But the net reality is Jacques Vallée, the Frenchman, and J. Allen Hynek, the American, are probably the two most of the early pioneers, the two most reputable researchers. They both came to the conclusion that these things are hyperdimensional. They're not extragalactical. That's a very fundamental insight, by the way, because they seemed opposed to being something that they're not. But the real point is that we're dealing here with a phenomenon that bridges the physical reality we understand and a reality that's outside that. One of the things we've discovered just in the last few years is that some of the constants of physics are changing that we thought were constant. And Scientific American, June of 2005, ran an article in which they pointed out if the constants of physics are changing, that implies that our physical reality is actually a subset, a shadow of a larger reality. And when you start dealing in the UFO area, that's one of the other demonstrations that there is a hyperdimensional aspect to this.
And you actually, from your research, believe that some of the people, the report they've been abducted, is actually true.
That is the spookiest side of this whole area, and probably the classic author in this area is Dr. John Mack, head of psychiatry for Harvard Hospital. He's written a book on this whole area. Clearly, and there was a conference at MIT on this whole subject. There are enormous numbers of people. Some estimates are between over 1% of the population, maybe as high as 2 or 3%, claim to have had an experience which involves being abducted by these vehicles or whatever. And now their stories are too bizarre to accept on the one hand. On the other hand, when you profile these people, they're above average intelligence, no prior psychiatric history, clearly subject to some serious trauma, and not anxious. They're almost trying to hide the stories rather than reveal them.
And their stories are similar. That's the thing that's so amazing.
They're united by some common threads. In fact, that was Mac's challenge to the conference at MIT. He says, if what these people say is happening isn't happening, what is happening? Because these stories all have common links.
I'll tell you what. Hold that thought. When we come back, we're going to talk about how these UFOs tie in with end times. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here with Chuck Missler. And Chuck, the only reason you're involved in this is it's a missing ingredient, a missing piece, something that no one looks at in the end times, these UFOs. Are these people around today, in your opinion, these descendants of the Nephilim?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Well, not necessarily as descendants directly, because I think that's been dealt with. But at the same time, I do suspect that the UFOs are, in effect, a modern-day echo, if you will. And that may be what Jesus was talking about when he says, as the days of Noah were, that there's he's implying a parallelism. And so that's why we got interested in this in the first place. And if that's true, we can test it very simply, because if we're correct, these events are going to increase as you get increasingly closer to what we call the end times.
Okay. There's an allusion to this it really grabbed me when you explained it on my radio show from Daniel.
Yes. Oh, exactly. In Daniel chapter 2, we have the famous image of Nebuchadnezzar. And as he goes through it, the mystery is the iron mixed with clay. And when Daniel goes to explain what the miry clay is, he says, as for the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. Now, I've had the exegetical experts confirm this. He shifts to a personal pronoun, but the they has to be something other than the seed of men in order for them to mingle with this. Just grammatically, it requires that. So that leads to a speculation. What are we talking about here? One of the possibilities is that we're dealing here with something that's not the seed of men, namely Nephilim, hybrids. And that's a hint there that there will be a proliferation of hybrids at the end times, because that's what Daniel's talking about. So that's a staggering verse to deal with.
You talk about Joshua's assignment to destroy all the people in particular areas that a lot of people wonder about.
Yeah, when you read that as a New Testament reader, you're shocked, because God tells Joshua to wipe out every man, woman, and child of four key tribes. And that shocks, the New Testament reader, because we don't understand that there is a gene pool problem again. We understand Genesis 6, the flood of Noah, was dealing, among other things, with a gene pool problem in the human predicament. What we don't realize is that Satan had again laid down a minefield in Canaan, because when he found out from God's revelation to Abraham that his descendants would be away and then return after 400 years, that gave Satan 400 years to lay down a minefield. When you study the book of Judges geographically, you discover that they didn't follow through in certain areas to wipe out their instructions. The places they missed was a place called Bashan. We call that the Golan Heights today. There's other areas, the central part, that we would call Judea and Samaria, but now it's called the West Bank. There's the third area, a place called Gaza. And you stand back for that and you realize those areas where they failed to follow through in the book of Judges are the same areas that are under dispute today. And you begin to realize that there's a demon overlay on human history here that we need to understand.
And that's my next question. In your opinion, are we talking about aliens from foreign planets, or are we talking about demons?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that even J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée concluded they're not intergalactical for a number of good physical reasons. We believe they're hyperdimensional, they're demonic. They also pretend to be something they're not. That means that one of their tools is deceptions. And so that gives us a perspective of where they stand biblically. I believe that they are real today and that they are demonic in their root purpose. And so that creates a danger to anyone that isn't tutored in this area. And that's one reason that we include it in our materials in terms of our own spiritual hygiene. So,
well, there were over a dozen astronauts that have reported to UFOs. And one astronaut in particular, his name is Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Mm-hmm. He's appealing that the files be opened. Let's take a look at that.
Yeah, okay.
And what I am suggesting is it is now time to put away this embargo of truth about the alien presence. And I call upon our government to open up like other governments have, and you will hear about that this morning, like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
That is so amazing to me, Chuck. Are we going to open up our files or not?
And the very fact there's resistance is alarming. You'd think that there's nothing to hide, they would open it up. So the question that really, you only feed speculation the way they're operating, keeping it a secret.
Okay, former President Reagan, you were telling me about an amazing, amazing statement he made about UFOs.
Well, that they may be the ingredient that it may take to get the world together. But on the presidential side, there have been two presidents that have tried to crack the security and couldn't, and four congressmen. So we need to put pressure.
So what is going to happen when the President of the United States says there are UFOs, we're being invaded, there's going to be a one-world government, and I mean, there we are, end-time prophecy.
It looks like it's very easy to see how this could have a major role in setting the stage if we understand the classical biblical scenario. And that's one reason when you go at this area, your primary study should be to understand what the Bible has said all along is the destiny of man and the history, the forward history of governments. And so as we watch every day that as we look at our newspaper and see where the world is going, not just in this area, the whole geopolitical horizon is converging. The more you know about your Bible, and the more you know about what's really going on in the geopolitical horizon, the more you see the convergence. We're plunging in to the climax of human history.
Based on all of your Bible study, all your research, where is America right now?
Well, America is in deep trouble. The America you and I grew up in, I believe, is over. I think that the most common question I get asked as I travel and have question and answer sessions is, where is America in prophecy? And all the end time players in eschatology are well identified in the Bible, and they're there. America's conspicuous by not being. The other question I always get asked is, why hasn't God judged America? Billy Graham quipped several decades ago.
Well, listen, we have a few seconds left in this show. We don't know when the end's going to, we don't know the day or hour. Make Jesus your Lord. Get to know him intimately. Let God say, I want to be your friend. He's speaking it to you now.